Hello, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of CPA Review and More. We are pleased to bring you the number one podcast for CPAs and CPA candidates. If you'd like to learn more about how Yeager CPA Review can help you, find us on our website at YeagerCPAReview.com. Now, here's your host, Phil Yeager.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Phil Yeager's podcast, CPA Review and More. And most of the time, we try to talk about how to prepare for the CPA exam. All right. Obviously, using the Yeager CPA Review product, because all those other products, we call them Brand X. Anyway, they haven't come back to me yet and said anything about that. Also, if you want to, I answer calls from CPA Review students, whether you're my student or not. And you can do this. You can call me directly, whether you're my student or not. And here's my phone number. Write this down, please. It's area code 301. That's in Maryland. 301-874-4900. And I'm at extension 5. And people are very surprised. They call me Saturday, Sunday, and they couldn't believe that I answer the phone on those weekdays and weeknights and weekends, whatever. All right. You can always get me. I want to help you pass the exam. Even if you're taking another course, I really do answer your questions. I also want to mention that, obviously, this is brought to you by the course that I started 40 some odd years ago called YeagerCPAReview.com. And actually, this gentleman just wrote to me because he wants to buy our books because he says he looked at everyone else's books and they were not using the AICPA blueprints integrated in the books. And he thought that was very, very helpful. And I thank him for saying that to me. Also, one last thing. My wife has had Parkinson's for 6 years, unfortunately, all right? And I try to raise money for an organization that I believe is an excellent representative of the Parkinson's disease. It's the Michael J. Fox Foundation for Parkinson's. And for those who might or might not know Michael J. Fox was in these movies, Back to the Future. And he got Parkinson like when he was 27 years old. All right. And I believe he has just stopped acting. I think he's 60 now, but he stopped acting. All right. But he raises a lot of money for Parkinson's. All right. And his foundation actually has come out with medications that are used to make Parkinson's a little easier to deal with. They're trying to find a cure. 5 years ago, they said they would have a cure in 5 years. Well, they still don't have a cure, but they actively do research. It's an excellent organization. There's also the Parkinson's Foundation, another good one. But I like Michael J. Fox. And if you can do this, go to Michael J. Fox Foundation. And please send in anything you can, $1, $5, doesn't make any difference. I'm asking you to do that for me. Because what I do for every student is I give them information. All right. And there's no charge for these podcasts. So I just ask you, please make an attempt to donate whatever you can to the Michael J. Fox Foundation. It will be greatly appreciated by me, my wife, and other individuals who unfortunately have Parkinson's. So today's guest, and by the way, all right, it was so hard to get an appointment with this young lady. All right. I called her 10 months ago. All right. And she said, Phil, I'm sorry. I got an appointment, to be interviewed on Forbes. All right. You name it. All right. And she's also part of this elite group, 40 under 40. That means that they pick 40 people, right? Under the age of 40. Is that throughout the United States, Roslyn?
Yes.
All right. So she's a part of that 40 people. All right. And we'll talk about why they pick people 40 under 40. I have never been picked for anything. So I really respect her. I'd like to get into maybe 30 people under 65. All right. But no one has actually said, Phil, we want to put you into that group. All right. I guess they look down at me and say, he's just scum. All right. I don't like to think of myself that, I am CPA, not scum. Anyway, we have here Rosalind Banks. She's not going to be talking about CPA review and how to prepare for the exam. All right. But Rosalind, all right, decided she didn't want to take the CPA exam. Nothing against her. I'm sure she could have taken it. She could have passed it and been a CPA. But she decided that she really enjoyed, correct me if I'm wrong, Rosalind, you really enjoyed doing tax returns, tax advice. All right. And she wanted to work and represent a client before the Internal Revenue Service. So instead of being a CPA, you can have that capability by getting another exam called the Enrolled Agent, an EA. And by the way, I've looked at that. I think some of their questions are harder in taxes than they are in the CPA. I have to honestly tell you that. All right. I don't know what percentage of people pass the Enrolled Agent. All right. Do you know what percentage pass?
I don't remember. It's years ago when I got licensed, but I don't remember the percentage rate.
Now, do you know how many people take that exam?
I don't. Unfortunately, I don't know a lot of the statistics. It's not a popular designation.
I'm getting the idea from what I read about it is that more people going towards that instead of the CPA. Because, you know, with the CPA, you have to have a fifth year of education. The starting salaries aren't as great as other business areas like IT. So people are not taking the CPA exam as much. In fact, the number of people has dropped and keeps dropping. But a lot of people are taking the Enrolled Agent. I think the number of people is increasing because it is, I don't know if you call it a certification. Is it a certification, more or less?
A license.
It's a license to practice. All right. What can you do with an enrolled agent? What do you do with that?
So the technical term that what the IRS makes us say is licensed or admitted to practice before the Internal Revenue Service. So we do also follow Circular 230. We're bound to that ethically, the same as a tax accountant or a CPA. We just have federal jurisdiction. So I'm not limited to a certain state. I can represent international, you know, before the Internal Revenue Service, even for New York. Like, you know, New York is one of those states that you have to be specifically registered for, but they recognize our designation and they don't make us register individually. So I thought that was pretty cool.
So you can represent clients before the tax courts, is that correct?
I think we technically can if we wanted to do, and representation could be, you know, preparing compliance, preparing things, or actually physically, you know, litigating, which I'm not a litigator.
Not a litigator. All right. What would you like to be a litigator? I mean, you just have no interest?
And no. Well, so there's the thing called the LSAT that I just did not want to take.
Law school admission test. No, we have enough attorneys. Don't you agree?
I let the attorneys do what they do.
Yeah, we don't want any more attorneys. God, they're, you know, they're just, who knows what they are. I can think of all different names, but that would be unprofessional. All right, so, and I'm not an unprofessional guy. But anyway, a number of people who are actually going to law school has dropped because it just aren't jobs for attorneys the way they used to be. All right, so the enrolled agent, I think you can't practice before the tax courts if you wanted to, or especially represent a client before the Internal Revenue Service, all right? If they're summoned for an audit or something, you can represent them, right?
Absolutely. I can get power of attorney and speak and negotiate on their behalf. So that's the most important thing for most people to know. Most people won't go to tax court, but the power of attorney, I could act as that.
How many years have you been an enrolled agent?
Oh, goodness. So I got licensed. I went through the grad school program, and that's when I made that decision. Don't want to sit for the CPA track, which was four parts of just all things accounting, versus I want to sit for an exam that's going to be three parts, all tax. And so I took the tax track when I was working on my master's degree in accounting, and then had a season as a manager of a retail tax boutique. And then I sat for the exam that same summer and just went straight through and passed all three parts.
With the enrolled agent, I'm just curious if you have your own practice, okay? You have your own practice on the enrolled agent. Okay. So, how many clients approximately do tax returns a year? Do you know that?
Yeah, so I sign about 50 to 60 returns a year. I'm kind of expanding my services and working with other financial advisors and people that already have clients that just really need the tax advice. And then I also do a little bit of work for nonprofit organizations.
So you don't really prepare the tax returns, or you act as a consultant to other enrolled agents?
Oh, no, I prepare and sign. I prefer to work with individuals and prepare and sign those and just kind of become their lifetime advisor for all things financial. I'll do like the family return. So if they're, have a kid in college or older kid, I'll do the return. Or if they have a business and then their family individual return or they need consulting. So I'll do that.
Now, not being materialistic, okay? All right. Can you make a real good living as an enrolled agent doing what you do?
Absolutely. We're subject matter experts. So, you can work for the IRS. A lot of people that I'm in these professional organizations with are retired revenue officers. Some of them have both designations as an EA and a CPA, and they say they make more money off the representation for the tax business. So it is a very lucrative business. I'm sure everyone's heard the jingles on the radio with all the tax resolution people that help you resolve IRS tax debt. Because that's what most people are afraid of, death and taxes. And most people are afraid of the IRS.
Oh, yeah. I see this ad with this New Yorker. He's a New Yorker, older gentleman. I don't know what his name is, but he will represent you and reduce the fines and penalties against. OK, first of all, this guy, I would really be concerned about dealing with somebody. He looks like he could also sell used cars part time. All right. Now. But he's an attorney also. So he's an attorney and he has a bunch of enrolled agents working for him. Now, as an enrolled agent, do you bill on an hourly rate when you do work, or is it on an engagement rate?
Our favorite answer is it depends, right? So it just depends on the engagement. It depends on what the client needs. If it's an organization, and they hire me on retainer, then it can get hourly. If it's an audit, then I'll give an hourly rate. But if it's just, hey, I just need this tax return compliance done, then it's a flat rate. And I try to be upfront with pricing and transparent so people kind of know what they're getting. And that's one thing that they love about solo practice and working with an independent instead of going to like a retail chain where I was working before. It's like when I was working with the retail chains, I couldn't tell them how much it was going to cost until the end.
Yeah, but a lot of the people, do they not when they come sort of, do you get a lot of people still interviewing you to do their work?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
So how do you deal with the person who says, well, I can probably get that at a lower price by going to a H&R Block. Are they still in business, H&R Block? All right. Mm-hmm. What's your answer to that if someone asks you that?
Oh, they're more than welcome to, what I do, the level of service that they get having a dedicated person versus going to a seasonal office is totally different. So the level of clientele that seek me out, they're not price shopping. They want quality. They usually been burned. A lot of them say, okay, I'm tired of screwing it up on TurboTax, or, the spouse, is tired of the spouse screwing it up on TurboTax, or they've gotten one too many letters from the IRS and they're like, here, I'll just pay you whatever to figure it out. So that's the kind of typical client that would go to.
Is that the typical client, or is that the not typical who, say, well, I can go to H&R Block and get it for this. By the way, the people at H&R Block who prepare those returns, are they enrolled agents?
Some of them are, yeah. I worked my second season as an enrolled agent at an H&R Block. And my greatest mentor, she stayed loyal to H&R Block. So there are, good people. Block has different levels of offices. So they have like in the cities, they have, the nicer offices that usually have enrolled agents to do business that aren't going to be like the storefront that serve retail. So, the tax business is very kind of diversified, but also kind of divided a little bit. So if you are, you just have a W-2, then the retail may work and you're price sensitive. The retail works best for you because you're just in and out and you're easy peasy. But for my typical client, they have a little bit more complexity. They want more of the planning. They want the year-round support. So then that's when they're shopping for an EA or a CPA or someone that's licensed.
Yeah, because the nature of Block, they're not open all year, are they? I mean, they're basically seasonal, aren't they?
Some offices are seasonal. And then, so for example, I was a military spouse. So in a military community, they'll have maybe 10 offices all around the city. And then they'll have one main office that is year-round support with limited staff. So you can, and I don't know how the other chains work, but you can possibly get year-round support with the big firms. It may not be the same person that you sat down at the desk with, but you may be able to get some kind of support or representation.
Now, you don't need that EA to do tax preparation, do you? Anybody can prepare tax returns.
Well, not anyone anymore. You know, they call those preparers. If you don't have a P-10, if you don't even have a P-10 with the IRS.
What is a P-10? What's a P-10?
So that's the preparer identification number.
The PIN number?
Okay. Yeah. So you want someone, if you pay someone to do your tax return, then they legally should sign it. And if they do not sign it or they do not want to sign it, that is a clear red flag. So the IRS has, you know, on their website to be careful with all the scams and all the ghost preparers, people that won't sign your return that you actually pay to do it. So, you know, people are more than welcome to do their own return. But if they hire someone, you want to get someone that you know, like, and trust.
Well, to get the PIN number, is there any type of educational requirement or exam you have to take?
There is, there used to be the RTRP, like Registered Tax Preparer exam. I'm not sure if they did away with that, but with the P10, you have to at least kind of pass like some background check information.
But not anything with knowledge, correct?
Well, we'll still have to do ethics and continued education requirements to keep your P10 active, and you pay the fee to the IRS every year. So again, I'm bound by Circular 230, and as an EA, I'm held to a higher standard, but some of the registered folks, they do have to do a minimum number of continuing education every year.
But the ones who are not enrolled agents do tax returns, all right? What way can a client, all right, determine what they know, the preparer?
Sitting across the desk and interviewing them.
Right, but you have to know what questions would you ask someone?
We kind of have like an interview sheet, you know, sitting down with the financial advisor or sitting down with the lawyer, you know, you want to make sure they understand your situation, that they're familiar. If you're military, you know, there's special rules and loopholes that you get, special tax preferences. So you want to do someone that is knowledge in your area. If you have rental property, if you're flipping real estate or thinking about that, you want to talk to someone that has expertise in that area. If you do business in multiple states or if you're an overseas foreign contractor, you just want to talk to someone that has similar clientele. And that's why word of mouth in our industry is still valuable, because if you get a new job or your spouse gets a new job, you know, the first thing you do is, hey, who do you go for a haircut? Who do you go to do this? Where do you go to do this? So you're going to find, once you kind of get established and licensed and start practicing in an area, you'll find referrals will naturally attract you depending on your clientele. And then, you know, based on what you like doing, you can always become a subject matter expert in that area and do more continued education in that area. So whether it is, you know, depreciation and rental properties or Schedule F and farming, whatever, you know, you want to build your practice around. And that's why I think a lot of EAs and tax pros are kind of niching out, because they can charge higher and be more of a specialty than just being generic, like, oh, we'll just take anyone that walks in the door. You know, I will sit down and do, you know, a 15-minute complimentary interview with someone that finds me just to make sure it's a good fit. Because if you're telling me, oh, I just, you know, have a W-2, I'm like, oh, well, you can do that yourself, you know, or, you know, I don't care about saving. I don't want to do any planning. I don't care. I just want you to get this done. Well, then, you know, you'd be a good candidate for TurboTax.
Yeah, but a lot of people walk in off the street. First of all, they don't even know what to ask. Are you an enrolled agent? A lot of them don't even know to ask that. And secondly, they don't know what questions to ask to sort of, you know, test you. Like enrolled agents take an exam, all right? So that's a means of saying, well, they've tested, they seem to know, you know, information about taxes, all right? CPAs, obviously, regulation part has taxes, all right? So I think you can more or less, as a person having their work prepared by someone, you can say, well, that person probably knows what they're talking about. But how many people who are not accountants, CPAs, go in to have their tax return prepared? The person's not an enrolled agent, right? How are they going to figure out if they know anything? Are you going to say, all right, what's the depreciation like for residential rental property? All right, you can't do that, right? So you're really taking a chance in many respects. And if you want to be, as we call, penny wise and pound foolish, all right, that person will probably do it cheaper than anybody else. You won't be able to really ask them the questions because you don't know what questions to ask. And what's going to happen is it could end up by saving whatever you saved, going in there and talking to these people as a potential client. It may cost you more than the difference in the fee between that person and a person who knows what they're doing. So really, I think what you said is true. All right. The best way to find someone is through referrals. Don't be cheap and walk in and, you know, to an HR Block or a Liberty, I think is another one, and say, oh, how much is your fee for doing an individual return? Well, first of all, it's hard to tell. There's so many different forms. But you go into an office, all right? The person is not an enrolled agent. They don't know what they're doing. But they say, oh, we can do your federal and state for $15. Now, the other person who's an enrolled agent has experience with this, you know, the type. If you have a lot of rental properties, you want to deal with someone who understands rental properties, depreciation, okay? That person says, well, I have to charge $75, all right? The person wants to save $60, but does not realize, and I don't know how they would realize this unless they're educated in some way by, you know, the commercials on TV don't really tell you anything, all right? But I would say, don't go shopping around. You want to have your return done correctly so you don't have aggravation with the Internal Revenue Service is to do what? Get referrals, the best way, all right? Even if they're CPAs, still get referrals because you know that probably if that preparer makes a mistake, it's going to cost you more than the difference. It's called aggravation.
Absolutely, I agree, yeah.
You were raised on a large family farm in rural Northern Neck of Virginia. Where is rural Northern Neck?
The Northern Neck of Virginia is a very secret, special place. You know, it's easier.
Just like CIA?
Does the CIA
have an office there? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I wouldn't be able to tell you that, Phil, you know?
Yeah, then you'd have to kill me. All right, but anyway, all right. So what's unique about this place?
It's a waterfront community. It's a farming, fishing, forestry town is how I introduce it in my children's book. So it's where I was born and raised, and it's just one of those small town, wholesome places that is near and dear to my heart. It's funny because we get a lot of people from Northern Virginia and DC that will come down and be weekenders. We get some people that were born here that come and come back or stay here. So it's a fun place. I really enjoy it.
To go down there, what's down there for recreation purposes? Rivers or what do you have?
Oh yeah, the Chesapeake Bay. So in the
Very nice.
So I'm currently closer to you via boat than I am via car. So to get to you, I would have to go up 301 and Route 3 and 301 and go across the bridge.
Right, right.
But if I were to just hop in my little boat, you know,
You have a boat.
No, oh. I don't. But I'm just saying, if I were to hop in a yacht,
it's a yacht. I'm sorry.
Yeah. But it is a waterfront community. There's the big fish factory here that distributes products all across the country. And it's not really a barge here, but like a big import area. That's more of Norfolk or Baltimore. But it's a small rural community.
What attracts people there? The boating. What else?
The water, the food, fresh seafood.
Good fresh seafood, huh? What's
your favorite? Land.
Crabs. You love crabs?
Oh yeah, blue crabs, of course.
Yeah, I don't know how the the number of blue crabs, is it down compared to prior years?
Yes, they've been really hard to find the last couple of years, and the prices just went through the roof. So, you know, when the weather is really cold or when it's really rainy, they're harder to get. You won't be able to come by them. But in the, you know, the nicer months when the weather's nice, usually there'll be a lot of vendors that have them.
When I moved from New York, New Jersey to, I first lived in Crofton, Maryland, all right, Anne Arundel County. And there was a place called Chop Tank. That was a crab place. And we never had crabs. I mean, we didn't know how to open them, that type of thing. But back then, they were 35 cents a piece for jumbo large crabs, all right? Now, for those who don't know anything about crabs, all right, that sounds, wow, 35 cents, that's all? Yeah, but there's that differential between large, medium, whatever, female, male, all right? But that was so inexpensive. Today, all right, I think they charge, it's more expensive to eat crabs than to eat lobster. Am I correct?
Probably. Yeah, that's about right. Yeah.
So, but you love crabs.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay. And you worked, all right, did you have a farm down there also?
So I was born on a family farm.
Tell us what a family farm is. Is that where we envision you pushing the, whatever it's called, all right, getting the dirt up? What did you plant and grow in a family farm?
So I'm a fifth generation farmer, family farm. We all kind of worked and did our part in the operations and kind of put ourselves through school and kind of give back and help my parents, my brother and my dad primarily run the farming operations. But we're actually row crop farmers. So we grow corn, wheat, soybeans, canola, rapeseed. So we think like the big John Deere tractors when you think about us.
Oh, yeah. Now, how many years ago was the farm started? Who is the oldest relative that you can go back to?
My great-great-grandfather, the Reverend Robert Haney, he was the first freed slave to own land in Northumberland County. So I'm not sure. I don't think it's in my bio, but National Geographic just picked us up and aired us on the Breaking Bobby Bones show. And they went back and my brother
talked about the Breaking Bobby Jones show.
Breaking Bobby Bones. Bobby Bones, he's a big...
Who's Breaking Bobby Bones? Who is he?
So Bobby Bones is a big radio guy out in Nashville, Tennessee. And so National Geographic gave him his new, brand new series. And so it aired July 4th of last year. And so we were one of the featured people, and they did great things while he was here, but it was a really great series on the history of farming, how it used to go back to this single row picker. And then now we use John Deere tractors and drones and carts to do a lot of the farming.
Now this farm was started, how many years ago was it? Your first family farm, first family was farming?
I guess about 100, it's like 136 years ago.
Okay. And were your relatives at that point, were they freed slaves or was it still?
My grandfather was the first freed black slave to own land, my great-grandfather. So he was enslaved here in Northumberland County. And then when they were freed, he was able to purchase land. And then my family just kept, you know,
the Emancipation Proclamation signed by Lincoln was about, what, 1865, around there, 1861, I think it was, all right? But is that what the freedom of your family was as a result of Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation?
I think so, yes. It's being here in Virginia, it was closer to that.
But we all know that that didn't mean a lot to the people down there, the Southerners, you know, and they still felt slaves were slaves, you know. And I love history. I love any history because my daughter lives in Urbana, Maryland, Frederick, and she's there near the Monocacy River, all right. And they have battlegrounds of that. And that, by the way, that's very interesting to go. I mean, I just like history, like to hear about it. And I think it's fascinating. But I'm trying to think of the word. How much research did you do on your family?
A lot. So we've actually had a lot of cases of racial discrimination, and, you know, me working in the family farm, witnessed it firsthand. You know, my father has testified against the USDA and Congress.
That's interesting.
Like that. So, yeah, we have deep roots in farming and advocating for farmers of, you know, all backgrounds. So, yeah, that is a big part of my history. It's kind of how I got, you know, into business and taxes, working in the family business, doing a lot of the bookkeeping and reporting. It kind of made me definitely want to focus in on the financial features of wealth and well-being.
We've reached the end of the first part of this interview with Rosalind Banks. Make sure to tune in next week to hear the rest of the interview.
Thank you so much for listening to Yeager CPA Review and More. As a token for our appreciation for your listenership, we'd like to offer you 10% off your next purchase with Yeager CPA Review. Save between $50 to $150 with code PODCAST10. If you'd like more information, look us up on YeagerCPAReview.com. And as always, if you've enjoyed this show, please rate and review on iTunes or your preferred listening platform. Again, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to you tuning in next time.